Welcome to KiteLine, a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here in KiteLine, we hope to share these messages with you across the prison walls.
Hi, and thanks for joining us. We start out this week with Emma reading a statement from supporters of queer and trans prisoners in Michigan. We get updates on prisoners in Alabama and Michigan. We talk to a supporter of Brisha Meadows, a 15-year-old girl in Ohio being held for the murder of her abusive father. We then learn about habeas corpus and its benefits to prisoners and their loved ones from Don Abdul Roberts, a former prisoner and member of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. Here's Emma.
There's a call for a new phones app in solidarity with Michigan LGBTQ prisoners. Queer and trans prisoners in Michigan are protesting sexual harassment and mistreatment by guards. Inspired by their courage and to show solidarity with their struggle, supporters most recently rallied on October 12th outside Michigan Department of Corrections headquarters in Lansing. The protest began in April when queer and trans prisoners at the G. Robert Cotton facility in Jackson filed grievances against a guard named Castilla for sexual harassment. Retaliation began almost immediately, with Castilla and his friends issuing bogus disciplinary tickets against the grieving prisoners. 3 of 7 prisoners were transferred to other units or facilities. The grievances were all eventually rejected for, quote-unquote, insufficient evidence, despite multiple witnesses, and Castilla and other homophobic guards continue their illegal behavior. We hear reports of the exact same thing happening at other Michigan prisons, multiple witnesses dismissed as, quote-unquote, insufficient evidence. Sexual harassment of prisoners is a violation of the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act and is just plain wrong. Apart from more people becoming aware of the issue, nothing has materially improved since we last rallied in May 2016 in solidarity with the prisoners. The Legislative Corrections Ombudsman's Office launched an investigation and spoke with trans prisoners at Cotton, but nothing has changed yet for the better. Prisoners have filed more grievances against Castilla and other homophobic guards, for example, Hirsch, Maury, Funches, Johnson, Taylor, and Van Zimmerman. Meanwhile, these guards have ganged up to retaliate against the prisoners for standing up for their rights. Queer and trans prisoners are getting more bogus tickets. For example, one prisoner was ticketed for sexual misconduct for tucking in his shirt. They are given excessive sanctions, such as 35 days of lost privileges for an offense that would normally carry only 5 days of punishment. Prisoners have been denied the right to review the supposed evidence against them, and grievance officers have refused to review camera footage to prove prisoners' innocence. For people outside of Michigan, there's an invitation to call into MDOC to support the prisoners. You could call MDOC Director Heidi Washington at 517-241-7238. That's 517-241-7238. If there's no answer, leave a message on her assistant's phone, Sandra Simon. Or you can call Warden Sean Brewer at G. Robert Cotton Correctional Facility at 517-780-5000. That's 517-780-5000. Here's a sample script. Hi, I'm calling to demand that you put a stop to sexual harassment, mistreatment, and retaliation against queer and trans prisoners. You need to take sexual harassment seriously because it is dehumanizing, brutal, and a violation of federal law. You should be listening to queer and trans prisoners' needs, not allowing guards to retaliate against them when they file grievances against sexual harassment. In particular, you need to stop the homophobic behavior of the following guards at Cotton Correctional Facility: Castilla, Moray, Funches, Hirsch, Johnson, Taylor, and Van Zimmerman.
Speaking of Michigan, Charles Lee Johnson, a prisoner at the Kinross facility in Michigan, died just a few days ago, on October 10th. According to a family member of another prisoner, Johnson asked for medical attention, but medical staff did not respond until 15 minutes after he slipped into unconsciousness. Kinross was a site of an uprising and strike last month, and other prisoners added inadequate medical care to the list of grievances in their ongoing struggle. There will be further coverage of Kinross in upcoming episodes. In other strike-related news, Kinetic Justice, who we heard from just about a week ago, a prominent prison rebel and organizer in Alabama's Holman Prison, was transferred to Kilby, another maximum security facility. Another prisoner said, quote, "Kilby is our bully camp. That's where inmates go who they deem to be problems that they have to iron out with brutality. You understand what I'm saying? When they send you to Kilby, that's where they break your arms and break your legs. End quote.
Breisha Meadows is now 15. She just turned 15, but she was 14 at the time of her arrest. She was arrested on July 28th of last year for allegedly killing her abusive father in Ohio, in Warren, Ohio. She grew up in a home where both she and her mother and other family members were documentedly, repeatedly terrorized, violently threatened with weapons, with firearms, physically attacked by her father. And she's alleged to have killed him in self-defense. And so she's charged with the murder of her father's death. She is actually being denied pretrial release. So bond in the federal system, bond is actually not used. Juveniles are either released or they're held. So she's being held and denied pretrial release by a particularly aggressive local prosecutor out in Warren, Ohio. So she has been locked up ever since July 28th. She has been torn apart from her family. She has been grieving what's been happening to her, even what's happened to her father. She's just had no space. She's literally in a cage. She's not actually able to, you know, be with her family and her friends, have sort of comfort to process everything that's happened. So she's being re-traumatized every day that she's continued to be ripped apart from her family. She was recently placed on suicide watch last week. She's now off suicide watch, but people have been mobilizing locally in Ohio and across the country to push back against this. Breisha is a young black woman, black youth, and black women and girls in particular are criminalized for self-defense at much higher rates than non-black women who are similarly situated. The case of Marissa Alexander and other cases in recent years nationally has sort of has given more momentum to increase sort of organizing around the self-defense, in particular of women and girls of color. And so a lot of people are mobilized around Breisha's case. We have a lot of work to do to push not only to have her released so she can be back home with her mother and her other family members, but also to drop these ridiculous charges in the future. If you go to freebreisha.wordpress.com, that's sort of the clearinghouse of information from her support committee. There are open letters that solidarity organizations and collectives all over the country are writing to urge that the charges be dropped. There are, you can write to her. Her address is on that website. And Solidarity Actions, there's information about organizing Solidarity Actions in people's in different communities all over the country. So I encourage people to go to www.freebreisha.wordpress.com.
This week, we have Don, an ex-prisoner speaking about the importance of habeas corpus.
I've heard of that, but I thought that was for long-term prisoners.
Nope, anyone who's in prison can file one.
What does it do?
So, a writ is a request for the court to order someone to do something, and habeas is Latin for let you have, and corpus means the body. So writ of habeas corpus is literally a request to let you have the body.
Yeah, but it's not that simple, right?
Sort of. Legally, a habeas petition asks the court to review the legality of your imprisonment. So, you challenge the reason for your arrest, or you otherwise explain why the continuation of your detention is unlawful.
I thought that only lawyers could file stuff in court.
Nope. Any person can represent themselves. It's called being a pro se litigant. Pro se is more Latin meaning for oneself. And a litigant is just the name for a person involved in a lawsuit.
I thought that only long-term prisoners file for habeas because, like, keeping someone in prison is inhumane.
Kind of. When you file a habeas petition, it's a civil action. Habeas is an actual lawsuit against the individual state agent who is holding you. So there is a limited number of ways that people imprisoned on long criminal sentences can ask a court to overturn their conviction or sentence. So usually long-term prisoners will exhaust all of those options in their criminal case while they still have a decade or more left of their prison sentence. So they use habeas after exhausting their criminal case because habeas is a whole new civil case. For a long-term prisoner, habeas is basically their only way of getting in front of a court. But someone, it could be me or you, at the beginning of a criminal case, can use habeas to hijack the otherwise cruelly slow wheels of justice and get in front of a judge before the state is ready to make its case.
What do you mean, make its case?
Like, if we're all sitting in jail, state sycophants are scribbling away, making up facts to suggest that they caught us in the midst of various criminal acts. And for that reason, the state can hold us and prosecute us for those fabricated crimes.
So what could you say?
Basically, that the state doesn't have any real reason to believe that I committed a crime, and that immediate relief is necessary to prevent further injustice from beginning. AKA, let me the heck out of here, you liars, because I got things to do. Today.
How'd you hear about this?
From Don, an ex-prisoner from Michigan. He organized in the 60s with the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, a wildcat movement in the Detroit auto factories, before serving more than 2 decades in prison. While in prison, he advocated for other prisoners as a jailhouse lawyer, and used habeas writs hundreds of times to seek relief for himself and others.
My name is Donald Abdul Roberts. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, in reference to preparation for the September 9th strike. I would like to say I'm not an agent of any of these, but I do want to mention the Seeds of Peace, the IWALK movement, the Anarchist Black Cross, the Redbird Prison Abolition, as being part of an excellent propaganda army for our prisoners as well as our taxpayers. What brings me to speak right now in reference to the subject matter is support from the outside in reference to the inside being the prisons, but we are also in prison ourselves on the outside, so it's a yin and yang question going here. But in the meantime, one tactic that has not been used by the movement in quite a long time, which I'm really speaking about the development of pro se litigators in reference to the question of habeas corpus.
Can you say what you mean by pro se litigators?
Pro se litigators is one who represents himself in court. That is a court under bourgeois law with jurisdiction over the subject matter and the parties.
And there's an overlap between a pro se litigator and a jailhouse lawyer in this case?
Oh, absolutely. They're both derogatory terms as far as agents of the status quo, only because the legal system is set up for the bourgeois. And so when you say you're a pro se litigator or a jailhouse lawyer, or you get called that, they're basically saying you're stupid.
For me, it sounds like a term of honor, but I guess it's a difference in perspective.
Actually, it is on our side of the question, but when they say it, when I say they, I'm talking about the agents of the status quo, they say that in a derogatory term. So if you say it like that, I agree with you.
Yeah, and so there's this issue then, or this tool of habeas corpus.
Yes, basically, you need to study whoever wants to start using this, and I'm saying this should be a movement study circle. And the more people who study habeas corpus together, the quicker you can master the techniques. And it's not about winning or losing in a court of law with jurisdiction over the supplement. That belongs to agents of our enemy. But what I am saying about habeas corpus, it lifts the struggle on another level on one of the greatest writs that Western civilization claims to be one of their own. And so to that degree, we need to push that reputation to the max. I've been here at a conference for the last couple of days since Friday, and I'm learning a lot about the current movement on prisons, and I'm surprised it hasn't been brought up. And the reason why it hasn't been brought up, because the prisons themselves are kind of slow on raising the question of habeas corpus, especially when it comes to the public. Because the first thing they do when prisons start organizing is cut off communication. And if that communication means that they know that you're a pro se litigator, that means that your mail to a courthouse will be delayed, if not destroyed. And if you're on transfer, it's gonna get lost. We don't know what happened. We put it in your property, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, moving right along, but us out here in the public, and especially individuals, if you are committed to the struggle, I think it is extremely important to learn habeas corpus. Not only can you get somebody else out of jail, you can get your own self out of jail with a minimal amount of struggle. And one of the things I know about when you get arrested, if you just stay cool, calm, and collected, and after they go through their little thing, and you know you've been processed in, you ask for a pencil and paper so you can do habeas corpus. And if you've done your homework, you'll know how important that is to have pencil and paper to do so. What's important about habeas corpus or its power is that they got to go and bring you before a judge, and if you file habeas corpus for a friend or as the next of kin in reference to somebody in prison, they got to bring that person to the courthouse. And from all I've seen about habeas corpus, they can't play with that. There's a lot of penalties for trying to impede habeas corpus, and especially in a situation that is absolutely fresh. When you file a habeas corpus when it's absolutely fresh, their time to engage in evidentiary skullduggery is reduced by 1,000 yards. And we need every advantage that we can get. And one of the aspects of habeas corpus is technical language of show cause. Show cause meaning show cause by underlining a set of certified facts on the question of probable cause and the particularity of probable cause. Certified means that somebody has either direct testimony or affidavit that you did something wrong. And that's where you can beat them at the game. If there's a bunch of mass arrests or 4 or 5, especially in a small town, most of them don't know how to write fast. They got to tell lies about what happened, and so they got to move around. So if you can hit them with a rough draft of just enough to get yourself in court, or just enough for them to think that you're fixing to go to court, excellent. And what's important about habeas corpus is that the movement is going to have to keep itself out of jail. And at this particular point, I don't see no lawyers on the horizon who have the moral turpitude to uphold the principles in which the movement is promoting. So administrative segregation is absolutely has a set of facts to establish jurisdiction of a court in reference to habeas corpus. Anytime you being in imminent danger and the disappearance of prisoners, especially, now that's the thing about habeas corpus. If you file a habeas corpus in the county in which they were at, and if they transfer that prisoner after you file that habeas corpus, that's a big no-no throughout all the states in the United States, and as well as under federal habeas corpus law. But the main thing is to learn how to use it. And before you use it, don't be a paper tiger and pretend to know something that you don't know. Actually know the statutory elements, read up on the case law of habeas corpus and get a sense of what it takes. And there's no appeal on habeas corpus. Every time you file a habeas corpus, it's an original writ. So let us just say, they say, oh, he's not there anymore. So where is he at? And they got to tell you that if you're talking habeas corpus. Well, if they don't tell you that, then you still got habeas corpus. You got habeas corpus into the Supreme Court of the state that you're in. You got habeas corpus in the Federal District Court in reference to where you at. And so as long as you are confident with the facts to establish jurisdiction for habeas corpus, the technicalities of it doesn't mean as much as the facts. It's the facts is what's established the law. So even if you can't cite a whole bunch of this, that, and the other and pretend like you're a legal scholar, if you actually got facts that fit within the scope of habeas corpus, statutory, constitutional, and common law, and the presumption on my part at this particular point is that you would actually find out what facts do establish habeas corpus. And prisons are excellent. From the county jail on to prisons is always an excellent time to file a habeas corpus. And this includes the conditions of confinement when we're talking about imminent danger, we're talking about irreparable harm, we're talking about a bunch of things. Now, as far as the mail goes, if you are creative with your facts, and when I mean creative, you actually have facts where a person has been transferred on account of something that went through the mail, they calling this treason or something like that, and they fixing to get charged with a felony, those are grounds under the First Amendment for an habeas corpus. So I really, really, just for myself, I'm willing to start study circles. My name is Donald Abdul Roberts. I'm gonna start pasting this on my Facebook page. I'm involved in a bunch of movement circles, and I'm gonna push the envelope on this. I already know a couple of states, and the main thing about habeas corpus is that it's still good. It's a bourgeois tool, but it has working class implications. It has implications for all toilers against the status quo. So what else do I want to say about habeas corpus? Well, that's just one thing. And the other part is, if you see that your facts don't fit in within the scope of habeas corpus, there's also the superintending control, which is another writ. Superintending control to establish jurisdiction has the same facts that you're dealing with, but only you're talking about the court having jurisdiction over a tribunal or another lower court. So that has a lot of implications there. And once again, the presumption is that you've done your homework in reference to the question of jurisdiction in these different courts. And that's a key question, is the jurisdiction of the different courts within the state, within the county, within the federal district court, and within the federal circuit court of the states or state that you're in will determine the limits and on habeas corpus, and on the limits of the superintendent control, which I almost lost my train of thought on the which has the same show cause component to it. Show cause why such and such happened against this rule or that law, against humane treatment, on and on and on. The other presumption on my part is that You have the gift of gab, and you also have the gift of words. And if you don't have the words, at least have the gift to investigate. I would like to entertain any questions at this particular point from my sponsor.
Was any of this affected by the so-called prison litigation reform process in the
90s? Absolutely. Absolutely. When that happened, that was the beginning of it. But the solid foundation of it was 9/11, the Patriot Act. Bush ran through everything. And what they did, they had compiled all the bills that they hadn't been able to pass in Congress and the different states, put that together, or were putting it together over 30 years. So the Patriot Act is all the things that they didn't pass that they wanted to pass, and they added yeast to it with the 9/11 hookup. So amen on that point.
Yeah. But it's still possible to work around the ways they've attempted to prevent prisoners from using these writs.
Absolutely. Once again, I'm strongly recommending habeas corpus, and I'm strongly recommending superintendent control, and I'm strongly recommending mandamus as a writ. I forgot about mandamus. Mandamus is a writ to compel. So if we're talking about a retaliatory transfer, we're talking about mandamus, bringing the person back, giving his property back. In other words, you done lined up the law based upon the facts that whoever did what they did, the court has jurisdiction to compel them to reverse themselves. So that's the essence of mandamus. And the use of the King's language goes a long ways in these situations. Radicals should have this skill. I'm amazed at the witlessness of using bourgeois tools. You want to use the bourgeois press, and here you got one of the most famous writs in the history of humanity as far as bourgeois law goes, habeas corpus. And so on that note, I'm gonna rest my case.
This has been KiteLine. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, KiteLine Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. KiteLine wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message or share a story to be played on the air at 812-269-2517. Or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one. You can find previous episodes of KiteLine or more information on our stories at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. KiteLine is intended as a means of communication between people across the prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been KiteLine. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. to hear more stories, news, and insights about Indiana's prison system and its impact on our communities. Thank you for listening.